Welcome back, friends and family. Let's continue our study of the book of Deuteronomy with Deuteronomy chapter 22, which is a collection or compendium of laws, instructions, or regulations concerning morality. That is how we can live in a way that's pleasing unto God. Verse 1 of Deuteronomy 22 says, "You shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and hide yourself from them. You shall certainly bring them back to your brother." So this first instruction tells us we cannot ignore jeopardy that's coming to our brother's property. I remember the story of Cain and Abel, where one said, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Well, this instruction or section in Deuteronomy kind of says, yes, we are. So if I see my neighbor's ox that's going astray, he's going to lose it, it's going to be lost to him, I have an obligation to rope it and help bring it back to him. So I can't just ignore another's need. Verse 2 says, "And if your brother is not near you, or if you do not know him, then you shall bring it to your own house, and it shall remain with you until your brother seeks it. Then you shall restore it to him." So the biblical concept is not finders, keepers, losers, weepers. If I find a piece of valuable property that belongs to someone else, even if I don't know who that person is, my responsibility is to bring that animal or possession to my property and protect it and take care of it until the proper owner is found, and then I return it to them. I don't get to keep it just because I say, well, maybe I don't know whose it is. I'll just put it in my barn and pretend I don't know. There's none of that. I must help protect my brother's property. And by brother, it doesn't mean one who's a sibling of mine. It means one who's a member of the community. And verse 3 says, "You shall do the same with his donkey, and so you shall do with his garment, with any lost thing of your brother's which he has lost, and you have found, you shall do likewise. You must not hide yourself." Again, we're commanded to look after our brother's property until we can properly restore it to the owner. Verse 4 says, "You shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fall down along the road and hide yourself from them. You must surely help him lift them up again." So even if my brother who owns the property is there, if there's jeopardy to the property, I have a responsibility to help him preserve his property and get the animal, if it's fallen, back up so that it doesn't die in the wilderness or on the road or whatever the situation is. And that ends that particular section on taking care of my brother's property. To sum it up, yes, I am my brother's keeper. If I find his property, it doesn't become mine. It means I become a protector of it until I can return it to its proper owner. Verse 5 says, "A woman shall not wear anything that pertains to a man, nor shall a man put on a woman's garment, for all who do so are an abomination to the Lord your God." I've heard this verse misapplied in my youth when people were very critical of women who wore slacks to church. They said, no, every woman has to wear a dress. But that's not what this verse is talking about. It prohibits cross-dressing. A man should look like a man, and a woman should look like a woman. When a man dresses up to pretend to be a woman, it's not ever for a godly purpose. It's for the purpose of licentiousness, and that's wrong. God calls it an abomination, which is a sin that's very wicked and evil in his eyes. I will say that I've seen in some Messianic congregations women wearing a man's tallit. That's prohibited by this verse. Something that particularly pertains to a man should be worn by men and not by women. That ends that section. It's just the one verse. And then we turn to another area of morality. And that's verse 6. "If a bird's nest happens to be before you along the way, in any tree or on the ground, with young ones or eggs, with the mother sitting on the young or on the eggs, you shall not take the mother with the young. You shall surely let the mother go and take the young for yourself, that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days." God cares about all people, but more than that, he cares about all of his creation. In this case, you come across a nest of eggs or young chicks with the mother caring for the eggs, or the chicks. We are commanded to set the mother free, to send the mother away, because even in the animal world, a mother protects her young, protects her children, and to take the eggs or the young chicks from the chicken or the bird of whatever kind in this case in the mother's presence is cruel to the mother. And we're to avoid cruelty not just to people but also to animals in God's creation. So if I come across a chicken sitting on eggs, I send the chicken away so that she doesn't see me take the eggs, and then I'm welcome to take the eggs and take them home and cook them and eat them. That doesn't mean stealing my neighbor's eggs. That's not what I said. It says if I'm coming through the country and I come across a bird's nest that isn't on my neighbor's farm, okay, it's just out in the country. Verse 8 starts a new section. It says, when you build a new house, then you shall make a parapet for your roof, that you may not bring guilt of bloodshed on your household if anyone falls from it. Another one verse teaching, which says, if I build a new house on the roof, which often in those days it was a flat roof and people would go up and they would sometimes recline in the heat of the day, or they would have meals up on the rooftop. You wanted to make it so people couldn't just accidentally fall off the roof and get killed. So you were commanded to build a fence or a wall around the roof so that somebody taking advantage of the beauty of the day up there wouldn't accidentally fall off and die. We must be conscious of protecting our neighbors. Now the halakah amongst the children of Israel expands this to, you have to put a fence around your swimming pool. Any kind of dangerous thing on your property, you must protect such that little children and neighbors and people who are unawares won't be caught unawares and suffer harm or death. Verse 9 begins a new teaching about not mixing things together. That is, what God created. We shouldn't try and make hybrid seeds, etc. So verse 9 says, you shall not sow your vineyard with different kinds of seed, lest the yield of the seed which you have sown and the fruit of your vineyard be defiled. So we don't mix seeds in the vineyard. It goes on to say, in a similar fashion on verse 10, you shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. That's being unequally yoked. This is cruel to the animals, because a donkey and an ox don't plow at the same rate or with the same strength. And when they're unequally yoked together, it's harmful to both animals. So we're not to do that. God doesn't want us to be cruel to our animals. Considering the idea of not mixing things together that are not made to be mixed, we come to verse 11, which says, you shall not wear a garment of different sorts, such as wool and linen mixed together. I know a lot of clothing we see in the store today is wool and linen mixed together, and God said, don't do that. Make the garment out of all wool or all linen, but not mix the two. God doesn't explain why. He just says, don't do it. So we don't do it. And now changing topic again, we're back to the topic of tzitzit, which is important for later in this chapter. If you don't know what tzitzit are, I refer to the man's tallit or prayer garment, talking about verse 5. A tallit or prayer garment is a type of shawl that men wear that are sometimes referred to in the Bible as a prayer closet. It's a place where we can pull the garment up over our heads and kind of hide ourselves from the world to pray to God. And on the four corners of the garment, there are tassels called tallit. And these tassels are tied in a particular way to represent the commandments, statutes, and judgments of God. And the knots make four Hebrew letters, Yod Heh Vav Heh, which is the name of God, where Moses asked God on Mount Sinai, what is your name that I should tell the people? And he said, I am that I am. So it's that very personal name of God that's indicated in the knots in the tzitzit, which are the fringes on the four corners of the prayer garment. This is where God, one of the places where God tells us to put them. There are several others. But in verse 12 it says, you shall make tassels on the four corners of the clothing with which you cover yourself. And it's reiterated here, even though it's commanded elsewhere in Scripture, because of what follows. The rest of this chapter is going to be PG-13. So parents, if you have little children around, be very cautious of having him sit through the rest of this because it's about improper sexual relations. And the reason God reiterates the tzitzit on the garment here is if I am a man in Israel wearing my tallit, and they wore it all the time, and I've got my tzitzit on it, if I'm going to partake in improper sexual relations, I have to first take off my tallit. And hopefully the tzitzit, representing the commandments, statutes, and judgment of God, would prevent me from doing that. It's a reminder of God's commandments, His statutes, His judgments, His love for us, His word, what He's commanded us. And it should cause me to stop and think before I engage in improper sexual immorality. So starting in verse 13, these items are of a sexual nature. So verse 13 says, if a man takes a wife and goes into her and detests her. When it says if any man takes a wife, it means to marry her, to take her in marriage. Okay? So I've married a wife, I go into her, and I find that she's not the virgin that I thought she was, is what's being discussed here. It says, verse 14, and charges her with shameful conduct. That shameful conduct is not being the virgin that she represented herself to be. And brings a bad name on her and says, quote, I took this woman, and when I came to her, I found she was not a virgin. See, that's what we're talking about. Verse 15 says, then the father and mother of the young woman shall take and bring out the evidence of the young woman's virginity to the elders of the city at the gate. So after the marriage, the man and wife go back to the marriage chamber. They engage in sexual relations, and if the woman's a virgin, there's going to be evidence of blood on the bedcloths, these sheets. That's what we're talking about here. Is the father and mother of the young woman who's alleged to not be a virgin is going to take those bloody sheets out to the elders at the city gate to prove to them that their daughter was in fact a virgin. It says in verse 16, and the young woman's father shall say to the elders, I gave my daughter to this man as wife, and he detests her, again, because he thinks she wasn't the virgin she claimed to be. Verse 17, now he has charged her with shameful conduct, saying, I found your daughter was not a virgin, and yet these are the evidences of my daughter's virginity, and they shall spread the cloth before the elders of the city. And if the man's allegation is false, then, in verse 18, says, then the elders of the city shall take that man and punish him, and here's how. Verse 19, they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give them to the father of the young woman because he has brought a bad name on a virgin of Israel. So the man has to pay a fine of 100 shekels of silver that goes to the bride's father. It says, and she shall be his wife, and he cannot divorce her all his days. Because he made a false allegation against her, they take away his right to divorce permanently. So he is now married, she's his wife, and that's the way it's going to stay. That was if the allegation was false. What if it wasn't false? What if they go and grab the bed sheets and there's no evidence of blood to prove that she was a virgin? Then it says in verse 20, but if the thing is true, that is, she really wasn't a virgin, like she said, and evidences of virginity are not found for the young woman, then they shall bring out the young woman to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her to death with stones, because she has done a disgraceful thing in Israel, to play the harlot in her father's house. So you shall put away the evil from among you. And that ends this section on a man who's claiming that his new bride wasn't the virgin she claimed she was. But we're continuing with the role of sexual wrongs as we go on to verse 22. It says, if a man is found lying with a woman married to a husband, then both of them shall die. The man that lay with the woman and the woman, so you shall put away the evil from Israel. So if a man commits adultery, he commits sexual intercourse with a woman who is another man's wife, that is a terrible wrong, and they're both responsible, the man and the woman, and they're both to be put to death. You will all remember John chapter 8, they bring the woman caught in adultery to Messiah to be stoned, but notice they didn't bring the man. Because in John chapter 8, their interest is not in protecting the law or showing that the law has been violated. They're trying to accuse Messiah of wrongdoing. And they want to trap him, have him make a ruling that the people will not accept. So, if a man and a woman commit adultery, she is another man's wife, then they're both, the man and the woman, to be put to death by stoning. Verse 23. If a young woman who is a virgin is betrothed to a husband, and if you remember the teaching on Jewish marriage, there are two stages of marriage. First is the betrothal stage, where the man asks the woman's father for her hand in marriage, and if it's agreed upon, he pays the bride price, and then he presents a cup of wine to the woman, and if she accepts the marriage proposal, she drinks from the cup. At that point, they're betrothed. So that's what is at stake here. They haven't undergone the marriage ceremony yet. They're not yet man and wife, but they're betrothed to one another. So verse 23, if a young woman who is a virgin is betrothed to a husband, and a man finds her in the city and lies with her, you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city. You shall stone them to death with stones. Now, some people are going to say, wait a minute, that's not fair. Maybe she was raped. Maybe she had no choice. But when it says that they're in the city, it means that if she cries out, somebody will hear and they can stop the assault. So that's why the verse goes on to say, the young woman, because she did not cry out in the city, and the man, because he humbled his neighbor's wife, so you shall put away the evil from among you. So even at the stage of betrothal, she's considered another man's wife. And if the woman cries out and others come in and they stop the assault, then she's going to be guiltless. But if she doesn't cry out, it doesn't matter later that she says, but it wasn't my idea, it wasn't my fault, he raped me. They're both going to be put to death. Verse 25 says, but if a man finds a betrothed young woman in the countryside, meaning out where there are no people, where crying out is not going to do any good, there's no one to come to her rescue. It says, and the man forces her and lies with her, so she gets raped out in the countryside. It says, then only the man who lay with her shall die. So she doesn't bear a death sentence there of sin, because there wasn't anything she could do about it. The idea is not to punish the innocent who are victims of unprovoked assaults, but rather to punish adulterers who are voluntarily engaging in sexual misconduct when they ought not be. Verse 26 goes on to say, but you shall do nothing to the young woman. There is in the young woman no sin deserving of death, for justice when a man rises against his neighbor and kills him, even so is this matter. Means if there's no way the woman can cry out for help and get delivered, then it's not her fault that something bad happened to her, no more than if I get murdered walking down the street, is that my fault if there was nothing I could do to prevent it? Verse 27 says, for he found her in the countryside, and the betrothed young woman cried out, but there was no one to save her. Verse 28 says, if a man finds a young woman who is a virgin who is not betrothed, and he seizes her and lies with her, and they are found out. So this is a case where the young woman is unmarried, she's not betrothed, she's available to be married, and the young man and she engage in improper sexual relationships before betrothal or marriage or anything, says, and they're found out. Then the man who lay with her shall give to the young woman's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife because he has humbled her. He shall not be permitted to divorce her all his days. So in essence, he has, whether he liked it or not, whether he meant to or not, he's now married. He's taken her as his wife. And whether he likes her in the future, whether he doesn't like her, whether she was a virgin, whether she wasn't a virgin, he cannot divorce her. Okay? He acted inappropriately. He acted out of lust, and he made his bed, he can lie in. It's kind of the way the old expression goes. So he's not permitted to divorce her all his days. And verse 30 is a verse that a lot of people simply misunderstand. It says, a man shall not take his father's wife nor uncover his father's bed. That's not a right translation. The word there for bed is the Hebrew word kanaf, and it refers to the corner of the prayer shawl where the tzitzit are tied. So it really has nothing to do with the bed. But in context, what this means is, a man shall not take his father's wife. That's not referring to the person's mother. It's referring to another wife of the father, so a stepfather. After the stepfather has died, the pagan custom was the father's wives get inherited, if you will, by his sons. That's a pagan custom, and God says, I'm not to have that amongst the children of Israel. So if my father dies, I can't then marry my stepmother. That would be improper. And when it says, nor uncover his father's kanaf, his father's tzitzit, what it's trying to convey is, it's dishonoring to my father for me to take his former wife as my wife. It's not talking about my mother. It's talking about my former stepmother. Upon the death of my father, I am not to take her as my wife. And that, ladies and gentlemen, ends chapter 22. And hopefully, these topics of sexual immorality. But thank you very kindly. See you next time in Deuteronomy chapter 23. Thank you.